Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess on 570 KLIF.
Hey, welcome back to Perspectives 7-0 and this is Perspectives Casino and Resort. First of all, I wanted to let you know we have a little different scenario here in the studio tonight. We have Rance Adams from randomaccessdfw.com here. Again, Rance Adams is here. He's actually shooting. We got the whole thing's lit up. We're setting it up. It's going to be all online, so you're going to be able to hear like the audio and the stuff that goes on in the background and all this stuff that you don't get to know, you don't get to see. Even though there's actually people coming in next week, and if you want to be one of them that comes in the studio and hangs out next week, go on and get on my Twitter or go on and get on the Facebook, or if you have my number, which you might, go on and text it. Either way. Anyway, I just want to let you know that Rance is here. He actually... It's pretty big here in DFW, which is cool, and it's locals doing big things. Glad to have him here tonight. And Brian Cubans, actually, I think a lot of y'all actually know a lot about Brian, but he was speaker in the areas of First Amendment rights, about hate speech on the internet, medical marijuana. He writes extensively on these subjects and others on widely read blog, The Cuban Revolution. He's been invited to speak at colleges and universities on these subjects. He's an 83 Penn State University graduate. We know him as a lawyer. We know him as someone that's taken on Facebook. And he's appeared on Fox, NBC. He's spoken at Blog World 2009. He's spoken at Facebook Corporate, to name just a few. He's also a recovering addict and an eating disorder survivor. And he's working on a book about these experiences in a recovery. And I believe that he's almost done with it. Hey, Brian, are you there?
Hey, I'm here, Ashley. Ashley, how you doing?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
It's all good. It's all good. What's going on?
Thanks for coming back.
No problem. Thanks for having me back.
Last Sunday, we talked about bullying and how bullying is a real thing, and I actually went online and kind of looked up some stuff. I also saw that there's a thing called cyberbullying now as well.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, bullying is bullying. Cyberbullying is you do it over the internet, you know? I mean, bullying existed long before the internet came along.
It's amazing. I had no idea. And a lot of kids, certain ages, are really the ones that are under prey for this, I think, more than anybody.
I mean, I think people of any age can be bullied. I mean, look at this bus driver who's in the news who, the internet has raised like $600,000 for her so she could, quote, take a vacation. You know, a school bus monitor in New York, and she was bullied by the students on her bus. I mean, bullying, you know, there's the stereotype that children are bullied, but anyone can be bullied. You know, it's about being in positions of power, you know, it's perceived power.
That's true. Actually, when I was reading all that stuff, it was talking about how bullies have a tendency of, you know, feeling like they have this power or whatever, but they also talk about how their life kind of fails in the end. I guess that might be the hopeful response. I think that when you were telling your story last week, and a lot of people actually got a lot of calls and some emails, it was really heartfelt because they had kind of gone through something very similar. I appreciate you bringing that up.
From my standpoint, bullying is important. When I write about self-image issues or body dysmorphia, which is what I suffered from and still do to some extent. I mean, all these self-image issues, eating disorders, and things of that nature, there is the one stat I saw was that 60% of them involved some sort of bullying as a child. You know, there is some sort of bullying involved. So bullying plays a huge part in how we see ourselves and how children see themselves and how they grow up to become adults and how they function as adults. You know, if you don't deal with it,
yeah, if you don't deal with it, you know, that's the problem. And a lot of people, it's hard to deal with. Let's switch gears a little bit right here. I have dealt with going into rehab facilities as well as dealing with sober living facilities. And I have several clients that have gone down that road. And I have several clients that have been sober for a year, 6 months to a year, 5 years, even 10 years. And we've all heard that phrase. And I've talked to my clients about it, the entire idea of rock bottom. Could you tell us what was your rock bottom, Brian?
What was my rock bottom?
Yeah.
Do you mean what got me? Rock bottom is such a term that can mean so many things to so many different people. Are you talking about the incident that got me on the straight and narrow?
Definitely the incident that actually woke you up or what have you, and you decided okay.
A little over 5 years ago, I had an alcoholic blackout, and there was also, you know, Xanax involved in this and that. And I basically lost 2 days, and during those 2 days, I did a lot of stupid things. And that was, I remember, it was an Easter weekend, and I had embarrassed myself. I'd embarrassed my family. I'd embarrassed my girlfriend. And it was, and the next day, I basically looked at myself in the mirror and said, enough is enough. I see somebody, I get professional counseling. I talked to my counselor, and then I walked in a 12-step and never looked back. That was my, you know, I've done work. I've been close to suicide. So from a literal perspective, you could say there have been worse things, but that was my rock bottom that got me to, you know, actually be able to move forward in a positive manner.
What's the title of your book again?
It's called Shattered Image.
Shattered Image. And where does that book start? And what's chapter one like?
Chapter one starts basically with an incident of being bullied. It starts with being bullied, an incident in junior high school where I was what you call pantsed. I don't know if your listeners know what pantsed is. I didn't know what it was at that time, but it's when kids basically they pull your pants down around your ankle.
Right.
And in my case, I was walking home to home about a mile from my school, junior high. This was seventh grade. And these group of kids basically pulled down my pants and then ripped them off and threw them in the street, ripped them into shreds. So I was forced to walk home a mile in my underwear. I was pantsed. And I never forgot. I remember it like it was yesterday. And that is where the book starts, with that bullying experience.
It's kind of interesting that you actually start the book there, because when I was doing some research on bullying, one of the things that it talks about is people that were bullied, especially at young formative years, have a tendency of being, one, insecure, sometimes as well as drug addiction and alcohol addiction can become a part of it because of the feelings that they feel inside.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, insecurity is a level of existence that can lead to drug and alcohol addiction. Insecurity isn't an affliction in itself.
No.
Okay, there are a lot of insecure people who function wonderfully and succeed and go on to do great things. Insecurity is just one level of a mental state that can lead to these other things that arises from bullying. Bullying makes you insecure, and because you're insecure, you try to deal with the insecurity through drugs, alcohol, whatever it would be to make you feel better about yourself.
Did you do the 12-step program, you said? What do you think about the program itself, AA, NA?
Well, I don't talk about AA because it's just not something we talk. You know, there's something called the 11th tradition, but I'll talk about 12-step in general.
Okay.
You know, it has its place for people. I will say that I would not have gotten where I am without starting there. There are things I like about 12-step. There are things I don't like about 12-step. But one thing I will say is, in general, at least for me, it was wonderful to be in a room of like-minded people who understand where I've been and who I can see, who show me that I am not unique. You know, that other people have these problems. Because you can go to your family, maybe they don't have these problems, you can go to your best friend. But until you can get into a safe environment where you can really cut loose, you know, and be totally honest with yourself. And some people don't even get totally honest in 12-step for years. You know, it's difficult to move forward in a positive way.
Let me ask you, what is your motivation? You have fought Facebook. You fight for First Amendment rights. What's your true calling, Brian?
My motivation is to live every day the best I can, doing the next right thing, and try to have a good time doing it and be the best person I can. I don't have these goals. Like, I have to make this much money. I have to accomplish this. I want to do what I'm passionate about, which is writing and speaking, and have fun doing it. And hopefully, you know, and if I make money doing that, I'm not adverse to that either.
That's good. That's what we all want, is to be able to make money in the things that we love, right?
That's right.
I mean, gosh, I want to too. So that's basically your motivation, is also your passion, right?
Yeah. I want to be the best at what I'm passionate about.
I was talking earlier, I don't know if you caught it in the first segment, but I was talking about addictive behavior and how a lot of people assume that addictive behavior could be cocaine or heroin or that type of addiction or alcohol. But in actuality, addictive behavior could go to anything. It could be gambling. It could be even Skittles, for goodness sakes.
I mean, well, those are the end results of addictive behavior.
Explain.
Those aren't addictive behavior in themselves.
Okay.
Like you said, addictive behavior if you have an addictive personality, you can, you know, you, you could get addicted to pretty much anything. I mean, I always used to say that if I thought Flintstones vitamins would make me feel better about what I saw in the mirror, I'd get addicted to those.
Yeah.
You know, it's about, you know, it's different for everyone. Why? What is fueling your addiction? What's why? You know, if you're addicted to Skittles, there's a reason for it. You know, Skittles are for some reason giving you some positive, you know, there's some positive feel, providing some short-term positive feeling. Maybe you're addicted to food. Maybe you're addicted to sugar. I mean, it's like you said, but it all comes back to how you feel about yourself and what are those addictions fueling? What feelings are those addictions fueling? When I say yourself, I can only speak in terms of me. I'm not trying to tell anyone else how they should handle themselves.
I don't think that you are doing that at all. A lot of people need to hear this because, like you said, AA or the 12-step program, when you went in there was a bunch of people that surrounded you that were in the same boat. A lot of people haven't made that step yet. And I know that there are people listening tonight that haven't made that step yet, and they're probably resonating with what you're talking about.
Well, and I'm not trying to convince people to make that step. I mean, 12-step may not be for everyone. There are people who, you know, there are people who don't want to do it. You know, who am I to tell people what their first step in recovery is? Okay.
Right.
I can only tell people what was my positive first step in recovery. You know, everyone has to figure that out for themselves. And, you know, the only thing I can say as a generalization is get into a place where you can't figure it out unless you can get honest with yourself. So whether it's 12-step or family, get it, or account or professional counseling, get to somewhere, get to a place in your life where you can be completely honest with yourself. Until then, you can't, you know, it's impossible to move forward if you're lying to yourself. You know, that's psychology 101. I don't have to be a PhD to know that.
No, that's true. I mean, when you're lying to yourself, you're really nowhere. I mean, there's nothing there. It's just a lie. It's just, it's nothing.
And it took me a lifetime. It took me a lifetime to be honest with myself.
It takes a lot of people a lifetime. Some people have never been honest with themselves.
And some people don't, but it takes a lifetime to build up a bunch of, you know, gobbledygook in your head too, right?
Yeah. It takes a long time to have those false thoughts in your head that make you feel one way or another.
You don't undo in 10 counseling sessions what took a lifetime to build. It's all a process. But you got to start somewhere. Everyone has to start somewhere, or you're just admitting failure, and you're just admitting that you want to just suffer with your thoughts, with your negative thoughts, the rest of your life. So at some point, you have to say, you know, it's time to really get honest and find the right route to do that. It doesn't have to be 12-step. And, you know, it really depends what your particular situation is.
Do you have any advice to give to people that maybe have been going down that addiction trail for let's just say 15, 20 years, for the majority of their life, and they're at that point where they're trying to sober, they know that they need to get sober, they know they need to change, but yet they don't know what to do when they become sober because they haven't been sober at all, so they don't even know where to begin in life?
Well, as I said before, Ashley, I mean, I have 5+ years of sobriety. Who am I to, you know, to start playing, you know, sobriety counselor for other people? I mean, I have enough trouble with, you know, with myself day to day. I can only tell people what's worked for me. And what's worked for me is to take each day one day at a time, to take each day just to do the next right thing and be the best person I can, and to each day be honest about my feelings about it. You know, and again, for me, being honest doesn't mean just telling myself the lies I want to hear. It means I get counseling. I go to 12-step meetings. There are a number of things I do, you know, to maintain that level of honesty with myself. But I don't think it's proper for me to give advice for someone who's in the, you know, to give counselor type advice to someone who's in the throes of addiction. I can just tell people what I've done.
Well, that's all you can do. I mean, you can only say what you've done. Just like when you're being honest with yourself and everybody else around you, you can say, this is what I've done.
That's right. Again, it's all a learning process. Some things work, some things don't. You know, I've gone through a period of trying to figure out the right antidepressants, you know, finding the right counselor that I have the right fit with. You know, there are lots of things. And again, it gets back to figuring out how I got that way. You know, if you don't figure out how you got there, whether it's alcoholism or drug addiction or, you know, even just depression, if you don't figure out how you got there, everything's just a Band-Aid.
Well, it's like when you were talking about the house.
You have to go back and deconstruct the house. That's right. You have to go deconstruct the house. How did the house get built? You know, and then you can figure out how to tear it down.
Well, yeah, that's true. It's almost like an onion, right? You peel the layers back of whatever, you know, subconscious psycho babble that people have told you or things that you've believed in for whatever reason, whether it's family or people around you that have sold you this bill of goods or even yourself, and you take that away and you look at yourself for who you truly are.
That's true. And there's a lot of, you know, as an onion is, there's a lot of stink in those layers. And then, so do you want to turn away when you reach a layer? Do you want to turn away because it stinks too much? Or you want to get even more honest with yourself where it stinks a little more, but it's hard. And it took me, you know, I'm writing this book. I couldn't have written this book until now because I was too afraid to be honest about, you know, my childhood and how certain things developed in my life.
Honesty is a good thing. It's cathartic to write a book, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And, you know, and if you don't want to write a book, keep a diary. There are many ways to go. You don't have to write a book to, you know, have a cathartic experience.
No,
you can have a cathartic experience just by talking to a counselor and getting honest with a counselor.
Well, it's funny. It's like an onion also burns. You know, when you're like cutting an onion or whatever, it also can burn and stink. But it's just like going through that process and realizing that it's not going to be easy anytime soon.
Well, if it doesn't burn and sting, then you're not. Then you're like, if we can pound. I can pound. If it doesn't burn and sting, you're probably not honest with yourself.
That's definitely true. That's definitely true. We're going to actually take a break real quick, and when we come back, we are going to continue talking to Brian about his book. We're going to also, I think, take a few phone calls, and we'll be right back in about maybe a minute, 2 minutes.